Syn Media acknowledges and pays respects to the people of the Woiwurrung and Boonwurrung language groups of the Eastern Kulin Nations, on whose unceded lands the Syn office stands. Syn and the Art Smitten team would like to further acknowledge the traditional custodians and their ancestors of the lands and waters across Australia where our content reaches. Art Smitten would like to expand that respect to Bunjil, the great creator ancestor of the Kulin Nations. Sovereignty has never been ceded. It always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
So just to kick us off, we're wondering if you could tell us a bit about other goods and services, general terms.
Let's go very general, because I feel like other goods has done and can do a lot of different things, and sometimes it can be hard to filter it down into a sentence or two. But primarily at the moment, Other Goods is primarily a retail space focusing on local and independent artists and makers, people that I know and love. It's curated by me. Other Goods and Services as a whole also incorporates the production aspect of what I like to do. I would say that I am a creative producer and I really like to work with people on their projects. And so Other Goods and Services as a whole in its title kind of allows me to do whatever I would like, which I love. But Other Goods itself is a little shop in Brunswick East, and it's a lot of fun. It's a really fun place to play is how I would describe it.
And you host events and exhibitions sometimes as well.
Yes, yeah? I do. I work with a lot of creatives who reach out to me and look at hosting events in the space. We've had magazine launches, we've had general launches for products, we even had someone rent out the space for a baby shower one time, which was really cute. That was very early on last year, and that was really awesome that people wanted to have their baby shower in the space. It was really cool.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
So what inspired you to create this third space for the arts community?
That is exactly how I would describe it, a third space. It was actually an accident, if I'm completely honest. So around 4 years ago, pre-COVID, my boyfriend had just moved over from the UK. And as a way for us to be creative and gain some income, we started purchasing furniture and homewares, and we would fix things up and sell them off again. This was where the title Other Goods came from. It was like furniture and other goods, or homewares and other goods. And so we started platforming that. We got quite busy pre-COVID. I had a few garage sales where people could come and purchase the glassware and stuff. And that was really, really cool. That was at our house in Coburg. From that, you know, I was thinking at the time, oh, it would be so great to have a platform for local artists and makers. That would be really cool. At that time, we were starting my boyfriend's footwear brand, 2-5, which is incredible. He makes handmade shoes out of our home in Coburg North.
Wow.
Yeah, damn, like awesome. So talented and so incredible. At the time, we had started 2-5, and I realized, maybe the idea of having a platform for artists and makers is a bit out of reach because I'm not a graphic designer, I'm not a copywriter, I'm not good at marketing. I'm just going to pause on that for a while. Around a year later, I think I revisited that idea, and really loosely, once again, very, very loosely, I thought, Other Goods is actually such a fantastic name. I'm going to go ahead and purchase the domain name from GoDaddy for like $2 for 2 years, you know?
Smart.
Yeah, othergoods.com.au. I then forgot about it completely. Completely forgot about it until I was working on having the space that we do now. It was just going to be kind of like a little shared space. I was going to just have a little quarter of the space and focus on made-to-order items, because I realized that there wasn't a place for made-to-order items specifically from like local artists and creators. If you're a local artist, or if you're a small artist and you're looking at expanding your business and doing made-to-order, the chances of acquiring a brick-and-mortar store is slim to none, because you need to build up so much capital in your brand to be able to do that. So when I was going to have a little quarter of this space, I was like, this is the opportunity for made-to-order items to be experienced. I ended up taking over the whole space and kind of freaking out a little bit. But I was like, wow, this is so exciting. This is going to be other goods. What are all the things it can be? It can be a pop-up space. It can be an event space. It can be a retail space as well. And I was talking to someone who was helping me do like brand direction stuff. And they were like, you know, you've got to make sure that your language in store that you're communicating with people, as well as your language that you use on Instagram and on your website, are all really, really similar because you want to have that consistency across your brand. And I was like, I'm on the phone and I said, I'm not having a website. Like, that's just not happening. That sounds like a lot of work, actually.
Yeah.
And 3 days later, I got a message from GoDaddy saying that my subscription had renewed. And I was like, what is this?
Divine timing.
Divine timing. And so I looked at it and it said othergoods.com.au is still live. And I was like, this is crazy, actually, because, you know, when I used to work in retail and I used to get so excited about visual merchandising or the idea of becoming a buyer or the idea of becoming like a business-to-business liaison and a brand ambassador, all of those things converged at this time along with that URL as well, which I just thought was so funny. Mm. And so then Other Goods was born and it became all of these really, it was like all of these loose manifestations and feelings inside myself converged in this one moment. And now it's been the best 12 months of my life.
That is really beautiful.
Awesome. That's such a good story as well.
It's quite funny.
Yeah, there's layers to it and it's kind of pulling all of these ideas together into one actual physical space.
Yeah.
I was thinking about when you were speaking about having a space for selling your wares, it's often like market stalls or more pop-up based pop-up spaces than what yours is. So it's really good to have that.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, I feel like that's probably the most accessible way for artists and designers to be able to be experienced. Tim, my partner, and I did markets for 2-5 for over a year before I opened Other Goods. And sometimes it was really good, sometimes it was not so good. But those are the places where I actually met a lot of the artists that I now stock. Quite a few of them I had met at the markets. And, you know, I find that doing the markets is necessary. It's almost like a rite of passage, even though it can be really intense and sometimes not very rewarding. It's a fantastic opportunity to engage with people, to hear feedback and to test product. But I will say to everybody who's doing markets and is getting really sad about them, just to remember that winter is a slow time and it'll always get better, and you will have times when you think, okay, well, what is, like, why should I be waiting until 9 p.m. before I pack up my shop? And sometimes someone will come through at 8:45 and it'll make everything worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you just have to stick it out even though it's really tough.
Yeah. That's just working in the industry, really.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Do you think, could you tell us a bit about these magazine launches or, like, other events that you've got in the space?
For sure. So let me try and remember, I'm going to work backwards. So most recently we had Demure magazine launch their 2302 issue. Demure had approached me, actually. They had, and oftentimes when someone is organizing an event or wants to meet with me, they can book a meeting in my link in bio.
Cool.
Okay. So you can book a meeting with me. And we can have a chit chat. So Demure Lucia approached me and said, hey, I'm thinking of doing this magazine launch. I think actually I might have been stocking Demure's magazine to start with. And that's when the conversation kind of came around, hey, what do you think about me doing this? I said, yeah, fantastic. You know, this is the scope. These are the limitations. So limitations being things like, okay, I can't move the giant shelf and I can't move the giant mirror, but everything else we can kind of rearrange so that it reflects your brand and your event. And then, yeah, Lucia was incredible to work with. I actually cannot talk them up enough because she had all of her information, all of the people that they were planning on working with, and then presented all of that to me so that I could sign everything off. I think it's just really important to know exactly kind of what's going on. Before that, actually, 3 days prior to the Demure launch, we had Everyday Lines and Lauren Erickson and Naomi Kensel had put together a private show, but it wasn't private. It was like a public event, but it was Naomi is from the UK and they were going back home the next week, and so they wanted to have a big group show with all of their friends, and it was a fantastic collaboration between all of these queer artists, and they totally transformed the space, and that was really, really beautiful. So that was a fantastic week last month where we had the two events back to back.
What kind of art was in that?
In that show, they had some people who had done some photography, some prints. There was one brand called Treif who had these amazing little oysters with soy wax in them. So they were like little tea light oysters.
Cool.
That was really cool. Naomi Kensel is a poet, so they had a few of their poems printed out available for purchase. And Lauren Erickson, who goes by Everyday Lines, is a fantastic artist and tattoo artist. And they had made an artwork. They ended up leaving it with me, which I was really grateful for. And then we sold it last week or the week before, which was
wonderful.
Very cool. Yeah.
Sounds awesome.
That was very nice. That's often how I find a few artists that are stocked in the shop. Maybe they were part of an event before and I see their stuff and I'm like, oh, my God, can we talk? Would you like to leave them with me? I would love to have them.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like the thing about other goods and services that's so special is how rare and kind of revolutionary the space feels. I feel like there's not much like it out there at the moment in NAM. And I was wondering why you think that is, why that feeling, why it feels that way. Like, what are the values behind it that challenge the way we usually think about shops and venues and events? It's a big one, but.
That is a big one, but I think to kind of to think about it in like a retail framing, it is really, really different. I worked in retail for a really long time. Anyone can sell anything. Anyone can be a part of a billion-dollar business that has the same quote-unquote culture when you walk into a store. There's something really special about other goods in that I consciously didn't want to create a space like that. I didn't want to create a space that felt like retail. I wanted a space to feel comfortable, which is why that space kind of feels like someone's living room. And I think that's really important to me because at the end of the day, for me, even though making money is really cool, like it's great to be able to survive. We've all got to do it. But it's another thing to be able to facilitate a safe space for stories and sharing. Sometimes I'll just get like a random person off the street and they say, oh my God, I've never been here before. I say, oh my God, come in, have a seat. And they sit down, we have a drink of water and we chit chat and gas bag and they tell me about all the things that they're into. And then I manifest success for them and they're like, oh my God, this was fun. Thanks. And I just love that. I really love having created a space that, like you said, feels revolutionary. It feels really different. I don't like the idea of people being sold to, but if people ask something about a product or I see them, you know, getting interested in something, one thing that kind of sets, I guess, myself apart is that I'm just so excited and so passionate about stuff. Like I would say that one of my, if I'm a multi-hyphenate creative, then one of my terms that I like to refer to myself as is a professional fan. I am just such a fan. I'm a fan of artists, about the creative process, about the journey and the story. And so to be able to share that is just really, really cool. And like anyone can be passionate about a product because they've been told to be or, you know, because like that's what you're trying to sell. But I'm really passionate about the pieces because each of them really do mean so much to me and the people mean so much to me, which is why, you know, I've curated the space in a particular way because I really, really believe in all the pieces that are there. So when you say it's revolutionary, it really makes me very, very happy because it does feel different. And, you know, a part of me was always like, you know, this is just kind of how it should be. Like, this is just how it should be for a space, you know, but I recognize and acknowledge that it does definitely feel different to a regular retail space. And I love it.
It feels like you've taken the best parts of working in retail and put it into a space.
Oh, yeah.
So those interactions and those passionate moments between you and a customer or even just a viewer in that sense as well, getting to do those on the daily would be pretty rewarding.
It really, really is. And, yeah, you're right. All the best parts of retail the people and exciting products.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
So can you tell us a bit about what the Green Pages are and why you felt it was something the creative community needed?
So the Green Pages is a directory for artists, creatives of all types. The idea came from me having discussions with people and them saying, okay, I don't know who to talk to because I really want to do a photo shoot or I really want to have a consultation. And I was already naturally saying, okay, like these are the people that you can talk to. Here are some contacts. And so I'd always just be sending out information. Mm-hmm. For example, there was one person, a customer who came in and they were like, I really need someone to make my wedding dress. And I said, well, I know someone. And then my friend Jessie ended up making Frida's wedding dress, which is very gorgeous. Cool. That happened in February. But yeah, so it came from me having already kind of been distributing that information.
Mm.
And I thought to myself, okay, there's actually no database for people who aren't part of a network. Because when it comes to the creative industry, what I've found is that you have to know someone. Mm. And if you don't know someone, how do you get a foot in the door? How do you gain opportunities? There are always people who can help you because collaboration is probably the core of where the Green Pages came from, the importance of collaboration, the importance of asking for help and knowing when to ask for help. I met someone one time who was an incredible artist and a musician, and they were like, I really want to do an animation, but then I have to go to school and learn animation. Mm. And I said, you don't actually have to do that. You can speak to someone who's an animator and you can work together and you can create something fantastic, and then you don't have to know all of the skills in order to make the things that you want to make. Sometimes it's really important to lean on other people to assist you in a project.
Definitely.
So I opened up the Green Pages as a creative directory, and we've had a few events since opening it up, maybe about 10 months ago. I'd really love to be able to do more with the Green Pages for sure.
Mm.
Sometimes I'll get someone who would like to access the Green Pages and I'll send it through to them. Full disclosure, the Green Pages right now is a giant Excel spreadsheet, and I would really like to fix that up this year sometime. I would love to turn it into a database that anyone can access on the website with maybe it's got like a photo, some info, contact details. You can click into it and like you can see the full profile for each person.
Mm.
You can sort everything by, okay, I need a photographer, I need a producer, I need a ceramicist. So that's my goal for the Green Pages, is to get all of that up online, which, fingers crossed, yeah, it takes a lot of time and energy to do that, but I would really love to do that. I don't want anyone from the Green Pages to ever feel like I've neglected them, because I'm always thinking about the Green Pages.
Mm-hmm.
Last year I applied for a grant. Maybe this year we'll be able to get a grant for it, but the idea of putting together like an Other Goods magazine, which would be really cool. And in the back, I would really love to have a physical copy of the Green Pages.
Yeah.
And it'll, yeah, that would be really, really cool. That would be so fun.
Could you speak a bit about, so right now you've got kind of a Google form set up for it.
Mm-hmm.
Could you speak a bit about that and also what happens once you do sign up at the moment?
That's a great question. Usually someone will fill out the online form. And sometimes, like, I am going to be so honest and full disclosure here, I'm really bad at sending out emails because Other Goods is just only me.
Yeah, you're busy.
I'm busy. There's also not a lot of income in my business, touch wood. I'm not going to tap on the table because I don't want the mics to be reactive. but manifesting wealth and success for everybody, especially all the people in the Green Pages. I would like to, often I will send out, or every now and then I'll send out an email update talking to people. I have sent out full copies of the Green Pages to all of the people. Hopefully everyone's received that so that if anyone wants to work on a project, they can actually access that completely. I think I've seen a few projects come together from people from the Green Pages who have maybe met at our Green Pages mixer event that we had last year. I'd really love to have another mixer. I've got a lot of ideas for what I would like to bring to the people of the Green Pages.
Yeah, and at those mixers, like, how are creatives responding to the idea? Does it feel like this kind of network of, like, is fighting a feeling of isolation or, like, feeling unqualified constantly? Or
I definitely think so. Like, people after the mixer did tell me that they were feeling really good that they were able to speak to other creatives and also have a space to be. And I would really love to host another Other Goods mixer. Other Goods is actually turning one next month, so maybe I need to turn that into a nice big Green Pages mixer. But yeah, people are responding quite well. I think people are happy to be a part of that network. I think I did some little feedback sheets back when I did my mixer, and some people were wanting a big group chat with everybody, which I'm going to have to veto. I'm so sorry. We can't do a big group chat. I'm not a big fan of broadcast channels because I feel like it just clogs the feed a little bit, and it just feels like one more thing to respond to or one more thing to interact with. It gets really stressful. I'd really like to take the stress off of people when it comes to being in the arts. So one of the things that I would like to do as a producer and as someone with access to the Green Pages is that I would really like to, my main goal is to be able to produce resources for creatives, whether that's through things like Tax Facts, which I held last year. I'd really like to work on, I've got in the works a grant writing workshop, hopefully. And these are things that when you're part of the Green Pages, you will have first access to. And I think that that's really important so that people who are part of the Green Pages are benefiting from being a part of them. Things like, I really want to do like a budgeting course and also a crash course in Excel, hopefully later on in the year. But yeah, there's just a lot of resources and maybe like interviews that I'd like to host, specifically about how do we get people paid the right amount of money.
Yeah.
Who knows how much to be paid. So yeah, I've got on my list like a lot of different things that I'd like to do to be able to present to the Green Pages first and foremost, and then open it up to general public.
I think grant writing's really important.
Huge.
I went to that mixer actually.
You did?
And I had a great time. I had some good chats.
Oh my God, amazing.
I can't say I followed through, and that's on my end, not on yours, but I was working on a project at the time, making a publication, and I had some good chats with some graphic designers.
Nice.
Which I didn't end up following up with them.
That's okay.
But it was good to have that facilitated anyway.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm really glad to hear. I think that we need to take away the pressure from ourselves when we don't follow through with things like that. I know that I'm really bad at, sometimes I can be really bad at following through or following up, and then I get really, really anxious because I haven't responded to someone in a really long time, and then I get really in like a pit of self-doubt and fear and shame and embarrassment, and I think you just got to let that go. Sometimes you can't do everything all the time, but it's really cool that you were there and that you met people, and I think that even just having conversations with people about stuff is really awesome.
Yeah.
To share what you're working on and speaking it out into existence is very important. One of the questions that I ask in the Green Pages form is, you know, what should I be manifesting for you? Because I think it's really important to be shooting for those really, really big goals. And even if you feel like you can't make it there, to share that anyway and to have other people thinking, okay, like, I'm going to manifest that for you, actually. I want that for you.
Yeah. And
I think it's really important.
Like, I can see you're thinking about this thing. It kind of fits into this other thing I'm thinking about.
Exactly right.
Those connections are made.
Yeah. That's collaboration awesome. Is so important. And I also think being less afraid, and I know that's such a big thing to say because we're all terrified. Mm-hmm. We're all so scared. But a lot of people get caught up on perfection. And I would say to make a mess, make anything, like just do whatever. And it's okay to, can I swear?
You can't swear.
Okay. That. It's okay to F up. It's absolutely okay to F up and to not completely follow through. But it's just, it's nice to be able to share in the mess with other people.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm.
Yeah. It is messy, but that's what makes it fun.
Absolutely. Well. Absolutely. Yeah, perfection is the biggest hindrance to creativity and making. And, yeah, nothing is ever too serious, so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In terms of fighting perfection, do you feel like the collaboration that Green Pages creates helps to do that in the sharing of knowledge? Like, why do you think the community is something that needs to be woven into creative practice, I guess?
Community is very important in general, just to have shared feelings and shared stories. That part's really important. Can you repeat the question though for me, please?
Yeah, I guess just like, how do you feel like collaboration and why, like, Green Pages is about ensuring that the self-isolation of being self-employed as an artist doesn't block you from sharing knowledge with others and getting under the administrative burden of feeling like you can't manifest and you can't shoot for the moon. And I was wondering why you think that collaboration fights that. Like, what's the power of it, I guess?
I think collaboration is, I think networking, community and collaboration really lends itself to like unpretentiousness, if that's a word, because it's when you kind of cut people off from collaborating with you or choosing not to engage in community, it makes it kind of like separates you a little bit. So I feel like the Green Pages and the networking and the collaboration is so important for community because, you know, everyone is in the same position of, okay, well, I'm not getting paid a professional rate. I'm maybe not a total professional. These are all the other skills that I would really like to work on. Who else would like to work on something? And like, you know, it's kind of like starting from the bottom in a way and leaning into learning on the job, I suppose.
Absolutely.
You know, like I've offered to be a runner for producers, an assistant stylist, like all of these little things just because I'd really like to learn the skills. And I think being open to that and not being so set in, well, actually, no, that doesn't align with what I want to do and that's not exactly where I want to be, or I would prefer to actually just be the designer that's working on a project. It means that you don't open yourself up to learning all of the different aspects so that in the future when you're working with other people, because working with other people is obviously crucial to collaboration, you can understand a bit more about how you're, like, say if you're directing people, you can understand how your directions are being perceived by other people, how other people are interpreting it, how, you know, if you're directing a shoot, how the runner might feel, for example, so that you can empathize and understand. And I think that learning all of those little skills are really helpful for your success overall. So I think that, you know, if you box yourself into, well, no, I only actually want to do this one thing, as opposed to, oh, yeah, I actually do have the skills for that, or I would actually like to upskill in that way, then you have the opportunity to learn different perspectives so that when you are creating your really big grand project, you can understand it more, understand the people, and you have this cohesiveness that is felt from the top of the shoot to the, like, all the way through to editing or whatever.
Definitely.
Yeah. I'm really lucky that I've run a few photo shoots or produced a few photo shoots. And one thing that is always said to me is, oh, Monica, this was actually the most fun and the safest that I felt on a photo shoot or a video shoot. And I think that that's really cool because in those moments I'm thinking to myself, oh, like, this should just be normal. Like, I'm not sure what I've actually done differently until you realize how it actually can be when you're working in maybe it's a pretentious space or it's a real, you know, like, I don't know, there's just something about Melbourne cool culture and like, like clout chasing situations where I'm like, I just don't relate, I don't understand it. So it's very cool when people say that I'm good to work with and professional. And you just need to learn how to be with people and how to anticipate need and how to collaborate. And also, as a Capricorn, I can get very set in my ways, but I've really learned over the last 18 months to be a little bit more flowy, a little bit more like water, and to understand that once you gain new information, you can pivot and you can shift and you can change and you can learn and you can grow and everyone stuffs up and then you just keep it pushing and...
That's the fun part, really.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
That's awesome. So Green Pages, if you wanted to sign up, you would go onto the Other Goods website?
Oh, that's a great question. Actually, yeah, I think you can.
Yeah.
I think you can go through the website. I do also have it, have the Google form linked in my link tree on Instagram. Awesome. But, yeah, no, there is a form on the website. I am not a website man myself. I'm very bad at it. So I apologize that it's not always like fleshed out completely, but yeah, no, there is a link on there for, you can sign up to the Green Pages or you can access the Green Pages. Yeah, you can see it all on there. One day I'd like to have it be an actual thing on the Green Pages so that you, or like on the website so that you can actually go through and find everyone, I think that would be really, really, really cool. I'd love to bring that to the people.
If you're listening and you're keen, you should sign up now.
Yes.
Before it becomes an official professional style.
Exactly
thing.
Right.
And then you can say you got in on the jump.
Absolutely. And also, if you're listening and you would like to help me with that, call me, please.
Book a session or...
Book a session. Come in for a chit-chat and say, hey, I'd actually really love to type out all of these bios for you on your website. And I'll say, yes, please.
Love it. Love to hear it.
Before the break, we spoke with Monica all about the Other Good Space and the Green Pages service they've set up for local and emerging artists and creatives. We're interested now to hear about your experience as an arts worker and the world of arts work.
Mm.
So, sort of kicking it off, how do you feel about moving into work in the arts industry? What do you make of that world at the moment?
What do I make of it? Great question. Full on. I think I'm still finding my feet. I'm quite new to the industry.
Mm.
I didn't really grow up in a very artistically creative household. I didn't really have a lot of identity when I was younger. And I only kind of found that when I moved out of home and I started to develop my own self. I never would have ever considered being a part of the creative industry at all until moving to Sydney years ago. I started to have the questions like, how does a non-creative person create? Because I feel like I just had a lot of feelings, or I had a lot of thoughts, and I didn't really know how to convey it when I didn't have a medium.
Mm.
I don't have a visual inner mind. Like, I can't see anything. I can't really visualize what something could look or feel like for me. So I really had no idea. And that was actually the first person that I asked those questions to was my partner, Tim. We met on Tinder years and years ago back in Sydney, and he almost cancelled on me, but I knew that he was a footwear designer, and I said, no, I need to talk to you. And I asked him the question, how does a non-creative person create, and what are the ways that someone can do that? And that kind of sparked for me lots of questions. I was also hanging out with my friend Carter Zhaj Komlosh in Sydney, and they are just an incredible, incredible artist that just moves with such honesty, and the feelings that they convey are just so beautiful and authentic, and I was always really amazed by it. So how do I feel now being an arts practitioner and a producer? Definitely a bit of imposter syndrome sometimes, like a lot of people can feel. I think that me coming from like a lack of formal education and a lack of, you know, not being in those art spaces has meant that I am approaching things in a really different sort of way. I'm not moving with the intention to, I guess, like make an impact on people, even though like that kind of comes on its own. But I don't know, it's a funny little thing, because I feel like I'm of it, but I'm not, like I'm in it, but I'm not of it, but I still am. I really like art and artists. I'm fascinated by the mind of artists and about process, but being in it, I don't know, it feels a bit funny. And it would be crazy. I would feel crazy if I was to be like, oh, I'm like a professional art dealer, like I'm not. I'm just having a good time.
Mm.
Technically an art dealer, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's very cool.
It's funny to come into this industry really, really sideways,
mm-hmm.
like really sideways, like not conscious and just being fascinated by process and creativity and what it's like in someone's brain and what their output is like and what their, you know, their thought process or their action process is, and to come at it from the aspect of curiosity.
Mm.
Is really fun and feels obviously very authentic to me. Yeah,
absolutely. Mm. And that idea of like, how does a non-creative person create is a scary one. I feel like makes people feel like the art world is this inaccessible, kind of intimidating, sort of unsustainable work world.
Totally.
And the pressure to produce lots quickly is intense and overwhelming, mm-hmm. but I feel like your sideways approach kind of tears that apart with all the tax facts and all of those things. How do you think that, I don't know, as a youth radio station, like budding creatives can respond to these sort of feelings of non-creative creativity?
Well, what I'll say is that, you know, even though my first question was, how does a non-creative person create? Now I would frame that a little bit more as, how does someone who's not an artist hone their creativity? And I think that there's a really big, this might be controversial, but I think that there can often be a difference between artists and creative people. Everyone can be creative. A lot of people can be artists, but not everybody is an artist, and that's okay. I know that I'm a creative person. I've come to realize I am creative, but I'm not an artist. And what I found within that space and within like asking people these questions, it was artists would have like a feeling that they need to express, that they need out of themselves. And as opposed to like, if you give me a blank sheet of paper, I'm going to have a panic. I'm going to have a really bad time. You can give an artist a piece of paper. And let me just preface, this is an absolute generalization and this is only my opinion, so don't come for me. But you give an artist a blank piece of paper and they might be able to convey something of their own volition. But for a lot of other creatives, sometimes we need a brief, and that's okay. That's totally fine. So how can people be creative when they're not absolute professionals is to make a mess and make anything. And those are words that I absolutely live by. Nothing has to be too serious. Once you think twice about something, like I said earlier, it is the biggest hindrance to creativity is searching or seeking or waiting for perfection. You know, sometimes you just have to make something and it's okay if it's not perfect. You pick it up and you keep going, or you start again, or if you're like me with ADHD, you let it go and you do something new, and that's okay too. I think not being too hard on yourself is really important, and especially if you're neurodivergent like myself, it's okay to do something and then do it, never think about it again, and then maybe in another few months' time you pick it back up and you say, hey, that was actually really fun. And sometimes you have to be nice to yourself and recognize that there are these cycles and these patterns that you can do, that you can fall into, and it's totally okay to just let it flow through you, be obsessed with something for a week, and then allow yourself to then be obsessed with something else instead of going, why can't I stick it out? Sometimes it's just not right and it's not the right time, and maybe it'll happen later and also maybe not.
Totally.
But that's fine.
I would argue as well, I think there is benefit in, and I'm not saying that, you know, everyone feels nervous about applying labels to themselves, but I do think there is benefit sometimes in taking the label of artist, even if you feel you're not. If you're creating something, it's a label that's there for a reason. For instance, I work with a number of people that I call artists who make objects that I think are fine art objects, but also consider themselves to be fashion designers or sculptors or ceramicists as well. But I think there's something in there with the power of using that label within the industry. It's important.
Absolutely. I think to touch on that, to get your introductions correct is so important. So one time I said to someone who is an incredible artist and designer, and I had said to them, you know, you work with textiles a lot. This seems to be your primary maybe like source of income or creativity. It seems to always be like textile based. And so I said, how would you like me to introduce you? Would you like me to say that you're a like textile or like a garment technician? And they said, absolutely not. I am a designer and I am an artist. And I think that it is really powerful to have the correct ways to introduce someone, because, you know, sometimes it could be disrespectful if you introduce someone as like, oh, this person is a tailor. Like, no, they're actually a designer. Sorry. But yeah, some people do get nervous about calling themselves artists because, you know, that's the imposter syndrome coming into play. And there was a moment where I was creating stuff and I was like, oh my God, I'm an artist. And then I realized, actually, no, that doesn't feel right, because the things that I'm making are just me learning a new skill and trying to output. Not that that's not art in itself, but because I wasn't outputting my feelings, it didn't feel therapeutic. And therefore I was like, no, I'm just being creative. And that can be therapeutic in itself, but it wasn't in a way that I was like, I have just made art. And I know that even that is a pretentious way to think about it. And I know that a lot of artists don't make stuff to think like that. But one thing that I will say about artists that I have spoken to is that they can always feel when there is like a filter to their thoughts that has impacted their output. Mm. Does that make sense? Mm. So if you are thinking about, oh, how are people going to interpret this? Can I sell this item? You know, when capitalism kind of comes into play, I find that I'm just making stuff that are just to sell because I can sell them and they don't feel fulfilling. Like people can sense that in the works. Mm. People can feel it. And I've had artists come through and go, I actually don't resonate with this piece that you have stocked of mine. I'd like to take it down. Mm. And I say, yeah, cool. That's so fine. Because my rule is that at Other Goods that I won't have anything that an artist is not 100% proud of and excited about, because usually if they're not super excited about it, then it means that the product was probably the emotions and the honesty in the product has gone through a filter and it's now a different frequency to what was intended by the artist, if that makes sense.
Mm, that's really great.
Mm.
Yeah, that's awesome. And to clarify, you labeled yourself as a creative producer earlier in this conversation. Mm-hmm. Is that what you would introduce yourself as?
And fantastic how would you define that? Fantastic question, Audrey. I liked you guys saying that I was, what did you call me? Arts practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I think what's my signature sign off on my emails is producer, owner, operator, curator, and fan. But if I was to finesse it down a little bit, I would say, yeah, creative producer or producer, creative consultant, creative producer and consultant, curator, and professional fan. I'm going to tack on every single time because I really, really am.
What are you a fan of at the moment?
Yeah. What am I a fan of at the moment? I'm going to ignore all of the media that I've consumed recently and say, oh, what was I thinking about? I'm a fan this week of Blumen Heck, who is a florist who has collaborated with me this week. Her name's Jade, and she's created this incredible Mother's Day bouquet that I'm offering pre-orders for in the store, open until Wednesday the 8th of May. That's a little plug. And yeah, I'm really obsessed with the flowers at the moment. It's really nice. It's really lovely. I also have loads of new crochet flowers in the store, which I can't stop looking at because they look so realistic. So that's what I am currently a fan of.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I feel like being a fan of all those separate things also speaks to the way your projects kind of involve these reimagining what is a product, what does it mean to be a product, do you love your product, when does it stop, when does the filter distort what you wanted the product to be.
Exactly.
And yeah, I guess that joining of a radical kind of reimagining of the way creatives work with your provision of practical tools to sort of administratively figure out how to be a creative makes me wonder what your dreams are about the future of creative practice. Like, what do you hope for the creatives of the future and how they, I don't know, define themselves and operate?
Oh, that's a very big question. I think if I was to just think about the ways that I could potentially impact creatives of the future, I would love for creatives to have access to real information that is helpful for their practices, or whether you're a freelance photographer or an animator or, you know, whatever aspect of creativity you're looking at, that you can understand what you should be paid for those roles. I think it's really important to understand that. I don't think money is spoken about candidly enough. I feel like in the last 12 months, since we've seen so much affect our like cost of living, that money is kind of coming into the conversation a lot more. But people need to be transparent about it. Not that I'm forcing anyone to have to be transparent about it, but it would be really helpful for creatives to access that information.
Totally.
There's actually a fantastic tool that I used, and you can just Google it just by Googling like Australian creatives pay rates. And every year this company, I don't remember the name, but they put together this PDF talking about how junior, intermediate and expert levels within all of these creative industries, like their average pay rate. And I find that that's a fantastic resource because then you can actually compare yourself.
Yeah.
but what else do I want creatives to be achieving in the future is just like less seriousness. Yeah. Not everything has to be editorial grade, like publishable in Vogue. Like not everything has to be like that. It's really cool when you do create things like that. And also back to being fairly paid, one thing that I had put together with one of my jewelers last year that I then shared with a few other people is a loan hire contract, which is really important for a lot of people who make things, make objects, make garments, who are often asked to contribute pieces for a photo shoot. This loan contract was created so that the artists and designers are able to get even like a little bit of income for each of the photo shoots. In there, it states, you know, X amount of dollars for a loan of a few days. Things have to be sent back to me in the perfect condition, and other things like contractual obligations to tag people in the post, because that often doesn't happen. Sometimes when people are borrowing items for exposure, sometimes they don't even get that exposure, and that's kind of crazy to me. So when I talk about people being fairly paid, I don't mean just people who are providing services, but the people who are jewelers, designers, footwear makers, just people who are doing things, who are loaning things out for photo shoots and actually not getting any income for it. A lot of the time when you do have these incredible pieces like shoes from 2-5 or Mateja Gluszczewicz, these are incredibly intricate pieces, and a lot of the time everybody needs a pair of shoes in a photo shoot, but they don't often think, okay, well, how are these people actually supporting themselves? And the loan hire contract has been incredible to see a lot of makers be able to get a little bit of income for their creations and to get contractually obligated exposure, which is really important. So I would love to see everybody become a lot more transparent about money and a lot more understanding of what it takes to do a photo shoot, and not expect just because someone's junior to do something for free, even if it is like a small amount of money, even if it is just like $50 to $100, it's really, I think it's polite, and I also think it should be strived for to pay people correctly. But even if you are working for a really, really small budget, to make some allocation for that is really important.
Even an in-kind contribution of some kind. I think it's also just respectful.
Like 100%.
If you like their work and what they're doing, and you like the skills they have, and they like you, it should be a two-way street.
Absolutely.
I feel like that's major. And that sounds like a really good service you provide. I was wondering if you could also speak a bit about the tax facts.
So tax facts came about this time last year. I started to think about how much money stresses me out and how I didn't know who to talk to about it. And a friend got me in contact with their accountant. I think his name was Sean Kelly. He is based quite far away, but he actually does Zoom meetings, which is cool. Nice. But he came in and he let me pick his brain. I had everybody send in anonymous questions so that I could ask him all of those things. We also had like an open conversation at the end where people asked more specific questions of him. But that was a really fantastic opportunity for people to be a bit less afraid of money and a bit less afraid of tax. Being taxed can be scary, especially when you're a freelancer. Yeah. Doing things like putting money aside for tax seems so crazy, especially when you don't have a lot of money to begin with, and how much money should you actually be asking for. So in that conversation, which I recommend everyone go listen to on our Spotify, is some information regarding, you know, the 11% superannuation that freelancers should be tacking onto their fees. So say if you want to say, okay, I would like $40 an hour for this job, which, just an FYI, no one should be working for $25 cash anymore. Like, that's just not appropriate. $30 to $35 should be your minimum. And that's, you know, even just based on what money you would get if you were working in hospitality. Yeah. And it's really important to gauge that if someone offers you $25 in cash, it's not okay. Yeah. But say if you were asking for, okay, I want to apply for this freelance photography role, for example, I would like my rate to be $40 an hour. You kind of have to get the guts to say, actually, it's $40 an hour plus 11% in super, which is another $4.40 or whatever, you know? So sometimes it takes a little bit of bravery and you need to not be scared. You need to be a little bit fearless. But something I told someone recently who was also consulting me about being paid for their very first photography role, which is very cool, like their very first paid role, is that you can compare yourself to other people, other agencies within the industry, and you can come up with a rate that might not be as hectic as the rate that's advertised online, but it's a rate that will actually ensure that you get at least a couple of $100 for your time. Because if you start thinking about, say, freelance photography, you're taking 300 images, you're editing them down to 30, it takes you a few weeks, it takes you however long, you know, you have to think about all of that time. And sometimes people are going to say, no, I can't do that, or I can't afford that. And that's okay, because at the end of the day, you would have been doing that job for free.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So once you shift from, I'm happy to do this for free, to I think I should be paid at least a little bit of money, the worst thing that somebody can do is say no.
At least you've asked.
Yeah. And you're so brave for that. Congratulations. And then you can try it again the next time. One thing that I'll say to people is that if someone says no, or someone is not okay with paying you that money, that's okay. Somebody else will come along. Don't let that hinder your desire to be paid at least a little bit, you know, but you can always ask for a little bit more. Okay. That's another little thing. You can always ask for a little bit more, maybe.
Yeah. Similar with pricing artworks as well, which we've talked about on Art Smitten before. Value your time and value your skill set. It's important.
Totally.
And everyone starts out doing volunteer work. That's just a big part of the creative industry when you're young. But at a certain point, you know that you're confident in your skills and what you're creating. And it's important to value yourself in that way.
Exactly right. For sure. And I think touching on that about pricing artworks, sometimes I will have people who are about to be stocked with me, and they present an artwork to me that maybe they've had for over a year, and they say, oh, I don't know what to price it. Just like price it, you know, this, and give me, they give me like quite a low number. And I say, okay, just because you're sick of looking at this doesn't mean that it's not going to be absolutely brand new to somebody else. Sometimes with artists, they can have the feelings and the imagery in their mind for a really long time. They then spend a lot of time creating it, so that by the time it's out of their body and out of their system, they're sick of looking at it. And I don't want anyone to be impacted. I don't want anyone's bottom line price to be impacted by their disdain for something that's just like now no longer a part of them. And you should, definitely price yourself correctly. And the way that I would say to do that is to think about not only how long it took you to come up with it, to create this, let's say a painting, for example, say it took you 20 hours to create this painting. It's not just about basing you on like calculating based on 20 hours worth of your time. It's also all of the energy and all of the training it's taken you to get to this point, all of the supplies you've had to go through, all of the energies in your life that you've had to channel through to be able to create this. So thinking about all of those things, you know, your hourly rate goes up, you know.
Entirely. And that's something that you learn, listeners, when you go to art school as well. It's an important part of the process.
But for anyone who didn't go to art school, book a meeting with me and we can talk about it.
Check out other goods and services. And something that we like to ask here on Art Smitten or incorporate into our interviews is what advice you might have for young people interested in working in and around the arts. Art Smitten is a youth-based show, and so we're keen to uncover the truths and be transparent about what it means to work in our industry. What advice would you have for listeners who might be interested in creating their own community space, small or large?
Where do you start?
Where do you start? That is a fantastic question. I will preface by saying that if you're looking for an actual shopfront, it is crazy expensive out here. But you know what? Just a space to make and get creative and get messy is fantastic. Even if it's a garage, it's incredible. I haven't yet been to Deschutes, but I really love what they stand for and what they do. That's a fantastic community-run space that is just all hands on deck, volunteer-run by, I think, four or five people. And I think that's amazing. So the advice that I would give to people is don't go crazy and want a shopfront and all of that sort of stuff. And just start small. It also can be, you know, I don't want to be like, oh my God, it's who you know. But sometimes you got to put a call out to your friends and say, hey, who knows someone with the garage or an empty space that they're not using, or who knows someone who has access to something, and you can just start something small. The advice that I would give is that when you're working with artists and you're dealing with money, to be really conscious of crossing your T's and dotting your I's. Mm-hmm. As a consignment space, I have contracts in place with all of my artists, and it can seem really daunting to create a contract. Anyone can do it, really. You just want to make sure that all of the terms are really clearly laid out so that people understand what it means to be selling stuff through your space, or, you know, receiving money or payment. I think it's really important to be professional in that aspect. A lot of the times, sometimes as young people, which I'm going to lump myself into that at my age of 32,
still young.
No, absolutely. But, you know, I asked about sin earlier, and apparently the cutoff is 25, and that's not me. So yeah. I'm not quite a youth, but I am still a young person. But sometimes things like contracts can seem extremely unsexy and daunting and scary.
Yeah.
But you never need it until you do need it. And I will also say that about insurance. Mm. I would love to talk about insurance That's really quickly. If you are opening a space,
yeah,
or you are sharing a studio space with people, especially if there is fire involved or movement involved or anything like that, insurance is very important. And you might not think that you need it, and it might seem like, okay, $400 to spend on insurance for the year seems like a lot of money, and it is, but you don't need it until you do, and you don't want to have to need insurance, but it's really important. You know, if somebody slips and falls, who is going to pay for that?
Mm.
And I know that that is really boring and unsexy content, but it is really important to have an understanding of safety for the people that you work with, for artists that you might employ or work with as a creative practitioner or an artist practitioner or a curator, and just to understand things like insurance and contracts are really important for when you do need it.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Lucy, you had a great question about administrative issues.
Yeah, I guess I was wondering if there were any sharp administrative or management learning curves that you had to deal with, apart from the insurance and contracts that you would alert people to in sort of starting not necessarily a physical space, but just like organizing a community of people.
Any surprises? Actually, thankfully, not a lot of surprises, because I did have contracts in place, and that's what is fantastic, okay? Mm. That's why contracts are important, so that you're not surprised by things. I do think that now that I've been really fortunate enough to have a few volunteers open up the space for me when I'm not there, shout out to all of them, Bridget, Annie, Rue, Maddie, I'm really thankful for them. But one thing that I know I've kind of dropped the ball on is having an actual document that tells everybody where everything is at all times. Mm. I mean, I don't have a lot of storage space in the shop. I've got one locker, but still, if someone's selling a ring, like, where are the things to pack that up with? You know, where are all of the excess books or magazines?
Mm.
So things like that. I think that when you're, say, curating an empty space, it's a little bit different because you don't have products in there permanently. But if you do have products in there permanently and you're looking to do a little handover, I would say to make a document like that.
Mm.
I would love to listen to my own advice and to make that because I find that, yeah, that's probably the biggest thing that will keep you from being able to be separated from the space, because you'll have people going, okay, well, where is this and where is that? And you think, man, if I just made a document, everything would actually be kind of fine, you know, but there's always a lot of learning curves. And like I said, I kind of dropped into this all by accident, sort of, and I'm still a year in. I think that a lot of people think that because I have a business, I am successful and smart and rich, and only one of those are true, and it's smart. I'm not rich and I'm not super successful, but I'm also really thankful.
Fairly successful.
That is true, but I'm not flush with cash or anything. Do you know what I mean? But I am definitely successful in the way that I'm really thankful and I'm loving what I'm doing. But people need to understand that I'm actually just learning, and that's okay. I think admitting that you're learning is really important because, yeah, I don't want people to think that I have all the answers because I'm just learning too. So if someone else has some ideas, I'd love to hear them.
And also, to be honest, if you work in the arts industry, it's highly unlikely that you're flush with cash.
Absolutely. Absolutely correct. But yeah, everything's just a learning experience. And I would say to move like water and just be okay and be ready to pivot. This might not be specific to admin, but just, you know, working with other people and thinking about things like even accessibility and being honest about what your accessibility for your venue looks like. That's really important. That helps people to feel included and understood and seen. I think things like we spoke about earlier, introducing people correctly. So if you're working with artists, that you're using the correct terminology, using their correct pronouns, all of those things that help to create an inclusive and comfortable space for people, where the goal is to not be pretentious and too cool and clout chasey, but to actually just be a place where people can come and create or be seen, or their work can be seen and experienced is the most important thing.
Definitely. Thank you so much for this advice and for coming on our show.
You are so welcome.
If you've been listening and you're interested in checking out other goods and services, you can visit the space in Brunswick East on 130 Lygon Street. It's in a good little area there as well.
It is a cute little spot.
And you can find them on Instagram at other_goods or on the website as well. We're both very keen to see what else is coming up for the space later in the year. Is there anything that you would like to promote that's currently happening?
Yes. So next Saturday, which is the 11th of May, we're having a little bake sale with I Made a Cake. That'll be really, really fun. It's also the day that you can pick up your pre-ordered Mother's Day flowers, which I will say to go and do because they're so beautiful. Later in the year, I'm hoping to have a few more glazing workshops run by Ru Liu. Got a few other little things on the cards, which hopefully I can pull together. Our first birthday is coming up and I actually haven't started planning it, so maybe I need to do something about that. But definitely with other goods, I am kind of flying by the seat of my pants a lot of the time. And that's okay. It makes it exciting to watch and then to go, oh my God, I'm so surprised that happened just now. And I go, oh my God, me too.
And you do.
So,
well.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. That's really awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. We had a great chat with you. Really enjoyed talking all things creative industry. I think it's great that we had the chance to speak with you. Normally we talk more fine art focused people, I guess. So it's cool to hear some administration sides of it, something that I'm working as well. And often if you are in the industry, even if you're an artist, you're going to end up working in these administration roles.
So for sure.
Really important.
But I will say that body doubling is really great. So if you have a friend who's also working on admin, to go and do that. Accountability is also really important. I might just tack that on really quickly. Like when we spoke about manifestation earlier, it's not just about having people manifesting a shared goal. It's also being accountable to others and having other people to check in on you and to go, hey, how's that project going? And you say, oh my God, I actually have not done anything. And they go, well, I can't wait to see it. And then you go, oh my God, someone's excited about it. I'm going to go work on that now.
Yeah.
So accountability is really good. Body doubling is really good. Parallel play, huge, huge fan.
Yeah. So awesome. All righty. Again, thank you so much. Lucy and I had a great chat. It's really awesome to have you on. I hope your first experience with live radio was super fun.
It was so much fun. Audrey and Lucy, thank you so much. Lucy, you've done so well for your first episode.
Yeah,
I've had a great time. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Free Palestine all the way. Thank you so much.
100%. And you can check out some upcoming patches.
Oh, yes, the land back patches. Yes. Yes, the Land Back Patches, a collaboration between myself, Safa El Samad, and one of Konark, Erica Walu. They are arriving this week. I think I maybe have 200 left to sell next week. They'll only be available in store. Come and grab them while you can.
Yeah, check them out. Pick them up. Give them to your friends, et cetera, et cetera.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Awesome.